You know, we have a whole crew of volunteers. This whole band, all volunteers. Back there, Laura on sound, been doing sound for 15 years. This is the last week that she's doing sound. Joe back there, she's been on it for 3 weeks. We had a complete meltdown of the hardware. She fought through it. Shane and Jeanette came here early, made coffee. There's probably about 7 or 8 volunteers downstairs teaching kids in their way. So can we just take a second and acknowledge all the volunteers who helped make this thing happen? Sometimes we forget to talk about that. I get to go and meet everybody and talk to everybody, but it's nice to just take a look and say, look at all the people making this thing happen, taking water. So I was just away on a scuba diving trip last week in Mexico, and I met this old mathematician. His name was Hugh. And every morning, Hugh gets up, gets on his bike. He rides it funny, kind of like hunched over, like not holding the handlebars like a normal person. He's kind of like hunched over. He's this hairy guy. Bikes to the dive shop. Goes for his morning scuba dive. Then he goes to the coffee shop where he has his coffee with all his buddies and they talk about math. Super exciting. Actually, it was kind of the highlight of my trip getting to talk to math with him, but I'm that kind of guy. Then he jumps back on his bike, hunched over again, bikes home, sits in his hammock and reads all day and naps. This is the guy's life. 3 months a year, he stays in this little town. That's all he does. Talk about a summer, huh? What's your summer looking like this year? Are you going to be like Hugh, spending the whole time at a cabin? I'm looking over here going, yeah, you are, aren't you? Part of the summer anyways. Are you going to be staying here in town, working? Do you have time off? What's your summer going to look like? And the reason I ask is because I want to ask, how are you going to take water this summer? It's one of those things that, you know, a summer can just go like this. Bam, you're done, gone. And you forget how your spirituality is going to affect your day-to-day part of your life. What we call taking water. So you've probably planned your holidays. You've planned, you know, all the fun things you're going to do, the mountain trips you're going to do. I was just talking to a guy downstairs. We're trying to figure out when we're going to go scrambling together. We plan all that. But if we plan those moments of water, where we can reach out and make someone's life a little bit better. We know how it is, because my life's just like your life. Summer gets crazy and, you know, it goes by quickly. And we forget. So we're going to dedicate all of June to just helping you bring water to front of mind. Get it so you're thinking about it on a regular basis, sitting here going, yeah, how can I take water? That's a good question, Clausen. So maybe it's going to be at the ice cream store when you go get an ice cream on a hot day like today. I know somebody who before she goes to lunch, she has to walk underneath the overpass downtown. She loads her purse up with change. So she sees someone who needs some change. She's like, she's got it. She keeps change in her office, loads it into her purse, gives it away. And people who have $5 Subway cards they keep in their briefcase at all times. I know people who buy food for the person behind them in the drive-thru or coffee. What's your thing? Have you thought about it? A group of us are going to go down to Camp Bonaventure. If you could jump across the river to Sandy Beach. It's not a beach, but that's what they call it, Sandy Beach. If you ever lived in Manitoba, that is not a beach. The bank of the river fell in. Doesn't make it a beach, but that's what they call it. Right next door is a place called Camp Bonaventure. Kids in wheelchairs, kids with physical disabilities, who basically don't get to have a whole lot of fun in their lives. Think about it. Every day someone has to get you out of bed, into your wheelchair. They have to do everything for you. What's the thing that's the most fun about summers for kids? Going to camp. And Camp Bonaventure is a unique camp for kids with disabilities. So a group of us are going to go after the service. We're going to go down there and, I don't know, we're going to pressure wash stuff, build stuff, make it so that kids with disabilities who have a tough life can actually go and have fun at camp. I'll never meet them. But that's water, isn't it? I don't know what your thing is. Whatever it is, have you thought about how you're going to take water this summer? So I told you about Hugh. I went diving with him the last day. I finished my certification, so I'm now an official diver, which means I could probably kill myself really easy. But so I'm diving down with this guy, and this guy is just, he's been doing this for 30 years, every day, all summer, gets up, goes for a dive. He's diving at the bottom, so we're watching him. It's just like a fish. We come to back to the top after the end. It was a deep dive. We're talking, oh, I saw this turtle, and I saw this. And Hugh reaches out to a friend of mine. And he goes like this. Actually, two hands. He opens his hand up. In his hands, he's got this beautiful little shell. Just so fragile. Beautiful colors. And he hands it to her and he says, I got this for you. Water doesn't have to be big. But in that moment, we all had this moment just going, oh, that was nice. So what are you going to do? Because here's why I want to talk about this. If each of us in this room did one little thing, brought a shell to somebody after a scuba dive trip, I don't know what your thing is. Think of how many moments of joy and happiness and love we're going to experience in the next week or two. And think about how that could change this world. So are you willing? I think all it takes is just to be a little aware and conscious of it. So that's my encouragement. We'll talk about it all month, because if you're anything like me, a friend of mine helps me. If as soon as it goes behind the back of my mind, I completely forget and I think about all the things I need to do and I stop taking water. And that's not what it, I don't think that's what my spiritual journey is about. So I want to encourage you guys, think about it. And with that, let me transition to Jeff Jarvis. Oh, actually, it's a video clip first. Take a look.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? How many explosive arguments have occurred over this kind of thing? How many tears have been shed? How many hearts have been shattered? I don't know about you, but it seems like every day I hear stories of another relationship that's in trouble or worse is ending due to wandering eyes, someone's illicit or secretive behavior involving another person. I'm betting that everyone in the room here has in one way or another been affected by some form of infidelity. Perhaps it was you with a painful secret, a shameful secret. Maybe you were the one who discovered the secret. Maybe you were the one that the guilty party came running to, looking for comfort, wanting to confess. Maybe you're the child of a parent and you learned about it going on and you got caught innocently in the crossfire. I'm betting we've all, in one way or another, been affected by infidelity. We've seen the emotional scarring, the insecurity, the bitterness, the thing can create, the broken families that often result. I know, because I come from one of those families. I can speak from experience that the pain that it's real, hey? And despite all that, it's as pervasive today as it's ever been. This morning, I want to talk about this thing. But I want to be very clear. I am not here in any way to add insult to injury for those who have made mistakes that are here in this room or that are listening to this podcast. I am not here in any way to judge or condemn anyone that's been on the wrong side of the line. I'm not here to drone on about the sad condition of relationships today. I want to get on the prevention side. I want to get on the other side and say, is there something we can do about this? I want to talk about how we might be able to protect ourselves and others from this kind of pain. Because I think there's a way. They figure it was about, well, roughly 3,500 years ago when the seventh commandment was established in the Israelite community. Unlike, though, the commandment of the Sabbath, which I talked about recently, which has tons of commentary and explanation, details describing how it can be done and how it shouldn't be done, all the ins and outs of this little thing. This commandment is not like that. This commandment kind of just says, yeah, don't be doing that. That's it. Just don't. Not a good idea. Don't do it. I've spent the past couple weeks taking a closer look at relationships back in ancient Israel. And I got to tell you, it was a different world than where we live today in terms of the relational landscape. Let me just tell you a little bit of what I learned. And some of this is common knowledge. There were arranged marriages back then, right? They were arranged. They were arranged by parents, predominantly, typically. It was more of a business transaction, this whole thing of committing a relationship one to another and getting married. This is kind of a contract. Parents in that day weren't overly concerned, it seems, about physical attraction between their sons and daughters. Oh, are they going to work chemistry-wise? Let's see. Let's evaluate their personalities. We got a match here. I wonder. No, it was nothing like that. It was more like, how many sheep and cattle would that family be willing to give me for my beautiful daughter? I don't think that would be as lucrative as this family over here. Susie, I want you to meet Bobby. Strange to us, yes. I was a bit surprised as well to learn that the majority of marriages back then were between first and second cousins. I was like, whoa. I guess there is such a strong desire to keep the familial bond, keep these families together. That was a reason for a large part of that. According to, obviously it was a very male-dominated culture, right? The double standards were so jarring, weighted in benefit of the male. Polygamy was an accepted form of marriage, just normal. Especially for kings and wealthy people, it seemed like if you had lots of money, yeah, might be a good idea. Have a bunch of wives, you have a bunch of kids, and then economically it drives your enterprise. I learned that a man could have sex with prostitutes, no social stigma attached, nothing. It's fine. Unlike the majority of today's relationships back then were extremely business-oriented. Women were married essentially to have children. Did you know that a man could easily dissolve the marriage if a woman was unable to have children? It seems monogamy and the primary concern surrounding adultery back then, at the time when this commandment was given, was not so much about endangering a relationship between a husband and wife. From my research, it was more about a man knowing who their children truly were. They didn't have DNA testing back then. They didn't have paternity tests. They want to know who their kids actually were, who was going to get the inheritance. Now, Now, I share these findings basically to point out that though adultery was forbidden back then, it was likely for a large number of different reasons than we have today. I typically like to find passages from the Bible that I think can speak to us today. You find the context of it in which it was written, and you kind of widen it out and you say the more than literal application is this. But I got to tell you, on this topic, from that context, back then, we are dealing in two completely different worlds. Made it tough for me this week. I could twist verses to make it work culturally for us today, where we'd all go, oh yeah, that makes sense. I don't want to do that. Obviously, the Bible points to adultery being wrong, but infidelity? Not so much. As a male, you could go messing around with other people. Just don't pick the married ones. You see where I'm getting at? I say it also probably for a little other hidden agenda. And that is to say, when people, I hear often Christians or people in the religious community saying, we got to get back to Bible-based relationships and marriages. I just want to say, which ones are you talking about? Side note there. According to the experts, it's only been in the last approximately 250 years that the concept of love matches have really gained traction. This concept where marriage is more about a love connection, a love interest than a business interest, in the last 250 years. In that time, marriage equality has become the norm, where each partner in relationships is expected to meet the relational needs of the other person in a much more significant way, in a very real way, instead of being just about unique gender-based roles, which was the norm back then. Most partners today see their relationships in terms of flexible divisions of labor. Kind of saying, hey, if you could do this, I'm going to take care of this. Hey, do you mind doing that? Okay, I'll watch out for this. It's not based on real hard, fast rules and lines. It's, hey, you good with money, honey? Great. You run the money. Tell you what, I'm pretty handy with a vacuum. I got it. We see them in terms of divisions of labor, companionship, and mutual sexual attraction. It's weird, though, if you look back and how that world operated back then, where marriage was more of just this economic business arrangement, infidelity, when it happened, was more a threat to our economic security. Now that marriage and committed relationships are more of a romantic arrangement, infidelity threatens a whole bunch of different kinds of things. I watched a profound TED Talk recently on infidelity. Relationship therapist and well-respected author, a woman named Esther Perel, explained the steep costs of infidelity in today's world. You need to listen to this. Death by a thousand cuts, with the steep emotional trauma that infidelity seems to exact. You just keep asking ourselves, why is it we do this? Why is it that we think this is the way to go? I mean, in this day and age, more than ever, divorce is an option. There isn't the social stigma attached. I mean, if a person is so unhappy, why not go that route? Why not just speak up and say, hey, listen, I'm not, I mean, there's options, right? Why is it we do this? Why is it we choose to secretly engage in some forbidden activity that could lead to worse heartache, a damaged reputation, carnage all the way around? Now, I know there are probably numerous answers to that question. And it's probably a lot more complicated than I will ever understand. But I want to offer an explanation today. I want to offer something as to why I think it might happen more frequently. One common reason. From my humble opinion, when it all starts, when the sparks begin to fly, I don't think we even realize what's going on. That's a pretty simple conclusion, isn't it? I think right at the beginning of that moment when all of a sudden you start locking into someone, you're feeling things. I don't think in that moment you really know what's going on, except that something feels really nice. Maybe, I mean, you just get drawn in, the eyes or the heart or something's happening. You get drawn in. Maybe it's a physical attraction. Maybe it's just the way they talk to you or listen. Maybe it's the way they appreciate what you do, support you. Maybe it's the fact that they just get you. They laugh at your jokes. They sit there and just, they do things that in some way makes you feel good. You're feeling a bunch of things you can't even label or explain in that moment. I would say that in those early moments, the intention is rarely to hurt anyone or to betray. I think in that moment, down deep, there is a subtle desire just to feel whole, to feel better. Before you know it, you can find yourself just wanting more of that feeling, which of course is found from that person. And again, I think this is so subtle, so subconscious. We're drawn. I don't think most understand even what it is. They just know they want that. Whatever it is that that person is giving them. To feel some kind of internal, in deep down craving or need. I don't think it's evil. I think likely there's a legitimate need going on that is expressing itself. It's coming to the surface. The question is, in those moments, what's the need? What is it? What is it you really need or want? You know what I found fascinating in all my studying was that often we don't know what it is in those moments we're feeling or what we're longing for, what it is we want so bad, what we're missing from the relationships we're in. The complexity of infidelity is often that we're searching for things we aren't even aware of until we stumble on it. Did you hear that? At the heart of an affair, you will often find a longing and a yearning for an emotional connection, for novelty. For some, it's for freedom. For some, it's for autonomy. For some, it's sexual intensity, a wish to recapture lost parts of ourselves, or an attempt to bring back vitality in the face of loss and tragedy. I mean, if you look at these needs, are these needs evil? Are they illegitimate? No, I think these are real, honest, legitimate needs. They're not evil. They're not devious. They're not carnal. But often we're not aware that we even have them until, sadly for some, they're trying to explain why they did what they did to a shattered partner. Do you see where I'm going with this? Often we're not aware what it is we're really missing. Found Esther's choice of words fascinating when she said, Priya fell for the arborist. Fell, falling in love. Sometimes it just happens. You trip, boom, you're in love with someone. That is often a very accurate example or description of what happens when all of a sudden we stumble on something we were missing and we didn't even know it. She didn't understand what she was craving until it was too late and the damage was done. What if a person could know what it is they're craving? What it is they're needing before the damage was done? I spoke about mindfulness a few weeks ago, talking about knowing the thing under the thing. Yeah, you love cars, but what's the thing under the thing that that thing has given you? Why is it you love it so much? What's the thing under the thing? And this, my friends, is at the heart of this message today. Because if we can understand what the thing is under the thing, if we can understand what it is that's compelling us or drawing us to certain situations or certain people, it's not just the person drawing you. It's not even that you don't like where you're at right now, but there's something perhaps underneath that's saying, I really like this situation, this person. I want to be around them. What is it that they're giving you? More and more we're realizing that affairs aren't pushing away the people we love. They're more running to the ones who provide something that we're looking for. So let me ask you something. And this is important whether you're married, whether you're single. Eventually, at some point, you engage in a relationship, whether it's romantic or not. You look for things in people. You're drawn to certain people for certain reasons. And it's because they're meeting a certain relational need. A guy named Willard Harley wrote a book called Love Busters. He's written a number, His Needs, Her Needs. His subtitle of his book, His Needs, Her Needs, How to Affair-Proof Your Marriage. His whole theory was, if you understand what the true relational needs are of the person you are connected with and committed to, and you are working at meeting those needs and understanding how that thing is going to happen, and it's complex, yes, but the better you understand and the better you are at trying to negotiate and make that thing happen, the most important relational needs of that person, the less they stumble and fall in these areas they don't want to. So let me ask you, what is it you crave? Do you know what your top relational needs are? Would you know? Would someone who is very close to you be able to say, oh, I know what you need? I'm amazed at how often people, if you were to ask, what are really the things you need most from this person you're committed to? How many times they're like, what is it you need that might lead you into doing something you regret? Can I be so bold as to ask that? What is it that the relationship you're in sometimes doesn't provide the way you need it to and leaves you longing? What's the thing under the thing? Could it be that if we were more mindful, more aware of our top relational needs, the things that fire us up, that make us love the person that's giving that thing to us, and if we were able to communicate that to the people we are in relationship with, that we could stay on the prevention side. We could minimize the carnage. We could keep us from tripping and falling for people we don't even love. I know there will be people in this room who will say, I know and I've spoken about it, and they're not getting it. To which I got to say, that is another message. But this is an important distinction, because this morning I'm talking about those that aren't aware, that aren't even knowing what it is they're so attracted to someone for. Why am I so drawn? Know the things under the things that you need and be able to communicate it. For those people in this room, you might be in a troubled relationship. You might be at a point right now where you say, it's too late, Jeff. I've already done something bad. I've already engaged in something that now I cannot be open and honest about because it's going to have huge... I don't know your stories. And without judgment, all I can say is, if you're at this point, you need to seek the help of someone who can help you navigate and mitigate the damage now and open up the communication and get this thing on the rails. Possible. All I'd say to any of you that are sitting in this place where maybe right now your wheels are spinning, you say, you don't know how many times I've told him. I'm saying before or her, before that thing gets so buried to the axles, before the bitterness overwhelms and you're going, I have no desire whatsoever to enter into that honest dialogue. It's too late. I'm saying, please, we can point you to help. We can help you. If you're here this morning, though, and right now you're going, geez, I don't even know what I would tell them in terms of what I'm really wanting. I don't know if they would even know what my top priorities are. I'm telling you, for your own sake, do your homework. Start thinking deeply about this. If you care about the relationship you're in, start investigating what it is they need. Have they been giving off signals? Have they been telling you and you're not hearing? And let me tell you something. I am the first one to admit, I don't get it most times. I've had Kathy tell me again and again, Jeff, a non-sexual hug. Can you give that to me? Sorry, I just want to be open about that one thing. That's as far as I'll go. Does not compute, does not, and just hold my hand. Quality time. She just loves it when I'm just with her. We went for a walk yesterday. I'm like, I'm thinking about numbers. And we're coming to the end of the walk. And I'm going, in my head, I'm thinking, we've hardly even really engaged in deep conversation, which would be something I would do. But Kathy just loves quality time. She's saying, I just need you beside me. And I need you not on your phone and not talking to a bunch of other people. I want you here. She has given off signals again and again that oftentimes I don't get right. So if you're here in this room and you're engaged in a relationship and you're going, oh, I don't know how I'd even answer that. Oh, you're not alone. But I'm telling you, this commandment is not just to beat us on the head and say, why did you? No. We got to get on the prevention side. And we got to start thinking through creative ways how we can keep these bonds strong. What is it we need to do? Now, whether you're single or you're married, whether it's romantic relationships you're in or not, this all applies. Know what the things are underneath the thing in your relationships. Let me tell you something. It's interesting. This lady, she ended her talk. Let me close with that. She said this. She said, if relationships that exist right now could bring into their relationships that exist right now 1/10 of the boldness, I want this. Please do this. I love it when you look like that. I love it when you do this. And vice versa. If they could bring the imagination, 1/10 of the imagination, 1/10 of the verve into that they put into the affairs, into their existing relationships, she said, you'd never see me. I'm done. This, though we live in a completely different world than they lived in 3,500 years ago, and though the marriage bond looked completely different than it does today, the relational, romantic commitments today look completely different. Let me tell you something. There's something about this commandment we just need to pay attention to. Nothing about this works, it seems. Let's get on the prevention side. Build up the relationships we're in. Healthy and strong, open and honest. I don't want to be another statistic. I've had enough of them in my family. I don't think you do either. Let's pay attention, can we? God, I pray for me that I will pay attention to the things, those people in my life, the things that they're asking for, that they're needing, that I can help with. May I be willing to do that and take water in that way. And God, may I have the boldness to talk about the things I need to. And in doing so, may we strengthen the relationships that I'm in. God, may Kathy and I get drawn so close as we get this better and better. Pray that for anyone else in the room that needs help. Amen.